When was your last checkup? No, not you. Although that's important, too. But when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Chevy Drive Chicago. Schedule a service appointment at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer.
This is the Noon Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN. I'm John Williams. Here's Tom Gimbel, job expert and founder of LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you, John. Happy Noon Business Hour to you.
Yeah, you too. You are talking about interviews these days. This has kind of been, how many interviews have you participated in your career, either as the guy looking for the job or the guy deciding if the person gets the job?
Well, the guy looking for the job, I haven't done too much in the past quarter century, but I did a bunch before I started my company. But on the other side, thousands. I mean, I've probably interviewed 4,000 or 5,000 people.
So what tips do you have for people if they're going in for an interview? First of all, lucky, I have a niece who's going in for an interview later this summer. And I wonder what advice you would have for her. She is a recent college grad.
So for a recent college grad, I would tell you, you can't fail knowing you. And that means you haven't done that much. So there shouldn't be that many details, the minutiae of it, that you can't recall. So everything you've put on your resume, whether you were scooping ice cream and said you got promoted 3 times, or you were caddying, or you did an internship and the reports you were running, you should know that backwards and forwards. They should be able to ask you any question, and you give the same answer every time.
I also wonder if it's okay to say, well, I don't know, not because you asked me a personal question, but maybe something about the company or the world of work. If you are young enough, you're in your 20s, that's a good question. I don't have an answer for you, but blah, 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 blah. Is it okay to say I don't have a good answer or I don't know the answer to that question?
Yeah, it's always better to say you don't know something than to make something up.
Though,
as my father told me when I went to college, he said, you know, always take classes with essay tests, because if you don't know the answer to that question, answer something else and show you know something. And so I'd say the same thing in an interview.
Oh, that's good. I like that. I never thought about that.
If you're going to say you don't know something, whatever that may be, you should be quick enough on your feet to pivot and talk about something that's relevant, tangential to that.
Right, but I do know about this. Yeah, it's
correct.
Sort of like in a presidential debate when they say, what are you going to do about the economy? And then they start to talk about guns or, you know, education.
Right. And they don't want that.
Okay, the employer doesn't want that. But I guess the point was you're segueing to something you are more knowledgeable about. But
yeah,
you want it to be relevant.
I'll give you an example. They might say, what's the revenue of the division that you worked in? And you'd say, you know what? They didn't disclose division revenue streams. But what I can tell you is, in our division that I worked in, we had 500 clients amongst 20 people that we serviced on a weekly basis, right? So I didn't know the revenue answer, but I did know something else about the company, and I proved I knew something.
If you're going into sales, talk a little bit about that. You said sales is discouraging in the beginning. What should a prospective employee expect?
Well, I think you're gonna go into sales, and most people when they join a company at any stage, what's the training program like? How are you gonna teach me about your product, your service, so on and so forth? But the number one thing that people aren't gonna teach you that you need to realize emotionally is rejection. And you're going to get so many more no's than you get yeses. And I can't tell you how many people I've interviewed over the years that they were really like, well, is there cold calling? Is there prospecting? I really just want to be in front of the clients. Well, I don't need you to be in front of the clients. I need you to get me the clients. And that's what the salespeople or people who want to be in sales need to get in their brain, is that my job is to go out and find new business. And in order to do that, it's like dating. Everybody's not going to be the perfect match, so you've got to be ready for that rejection. And most people aren't, and they don't want to admit that.
Well, why would you be good at that? Why would you have a predisposition to tolerate that? I hung up on a guy the other day.
That's why you shouldn't do it, John.
Well, are there some people out there that doesn't bother, the hang-ups or the dismissals?
It never bothered me, John. And I mean that genuinely. I'm not saying to take a counterpoint. My feeling was, when I was on the phone dialing, nobody saw me. It wasn't about what I looked like. It was the tone of my voice. and it was whatever mood they were in during the day. And for me, it was an easy way to make a living. I had to dial 10 digits and yes, yeah. No, maybe. And there was very little effort from that point of exertion to be able to do that. Because you say that about rejection, John. I'll show you equal amount of people who say they couldn't sit there and talk into a microphone for 4 hours.
Yeah. Well, that's nice of you to say. I take your point, but I think
I didn't say you did it well, John. I just said they wouldn't want to do it.
look at what I did. I got more questions for Tom Gimble. Stay right there, Tom. He is the job expert and founder of LaSalle Network. Later, we'll visit with Harvey Wells. He'll help you lower your tech bills. Tom Gimble, the job expert's on the line. We're talking a little bit about what it's like when you enter the work world, either as a recent graduate interviewing or maybe what you experience out there in the sales world. What else did you want to say about all of that? Did I leave some points off the page here, Tom?
No, I think the key is, one of the keys in an interview or when you start a job is really working on not being defensive. And I think so often you go in and you're, people in general, human nature is to be, why are you asking me that question? What relevancy does that have to the job? And people are trying to get to know you. They want to find out in a world where via online and now AI, everything can be scripted. You can punch in what questions will I be asked for this interview or that interview. But people are going to ask you questions to try to get to know you and try to throw you off. And the reason is because clients and vendors and partners and coworkers are going to bother you at times. And how you respond is really a telltale sign to how you'll behave in the workplace. So you shouldn't go in being defensive. You should go in being open-minded.
I wonder if I could rehearse with AI. I wonder if that would help. I'm sure there's tutorials out there.
Absolutely there are. And you can, you know, a lot of it's written, but there's tutorials that you can do online with, you know, bots. And then there's also, you can go into recruiting firms and meet with recruiters and staffing companies. Obviously, I'm partial to that, but you can practice and get tips on how to do that. The key is what most people do is they go to their closest friends and family for coaching and resume review help. And usually those are very bad people to go to because they like you and they're going to tell you how great you are and they're going to not want to give you bad news. And so you really need that honest friend or that tough love from a parent who's going to tell you the truth.
Or a service you pay for. Now that I think about it, Beth, one of our producers here, very good producer for a very long time. She's moved on to another career, but she was in charge of the interns. And all the interns had to be interviewed by her. So she saw everything that the interns do wrong and do right. And so she then had a service on her own, as I recall. And it would be a coaching thing, like one written and two or three phone calls. I don't even think there was Zoom then. But it would be practice the interview, you know, and you give her $100 or whatever it was. And I thought that was a really good idea because some of the stuff the intern candidates were coming in with was just really bad, you know, typos or sentence fragments or word salads. And maybe they weren't dressed appropriately in person. All of that can be coached.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'll give you something really basic. And this also comes from people not going into the office as much. But I was talking to a global head of HR of a nine-figure, you know, $100 million plus company the other day, and they had to go up to a salesperson and say, if you wear the socks to play basketball in, you shouldn't wear them with your suit to work.
Well, now, wait 1 minute. Socks are the new pop. They're the new pocket square.
They are, but you wouldn't wear a pair of socks with tacos on them to play basketball. You'd wear a pair of athletic socks. And that was more the point of, you know, the kid was wearing what you and I would call old-fashioned tube socks with a suit. And
You don't wear that with a suit. Tacos on your ankles are almost okay, depending on the color and how well they match the pants.
My brother's ankles are like neon lights. I mean, he loves the bright socks, and he's an insurance executive for 30 years.
Who was it the Prime Minister of Canada? Who was the, there's a famous politician that rocks the socks. And I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember that.
Who that is. Okay. One other thing here that I know kind of caught your eye or you had something to say about with this Bear Stadium deal still in limbo. This is a survey and showing incompetence on three levels, city government, state government, Bears ownership. Did you write this poll question?
Yeah. Because I actually followed it up on what I brought up to you a week or two ago.
It is very leading, sir. I had a hot take for Chicago and Illinois residents. You wrote, "I'm not saying I like this person or think he's a good person, just a simple question." All right, what's your poll question?
If Mike Madigan were still running the Illinois State House, would the Bear Stadium be done by now?
And are you getting a response to that, or are we launching?
Yeah, I think we've gotten close to 100. And last I checked, I haven't checked that recently, but last I checked, it was about 60% thought yes, the stadium deal would be done, and 40% thought no.
Oh, I'm a big yes on that. However, I would not make that deal because meanwhile, he gets all of the, you know, his law firm gets all of the work, and his buddies are unpaid interns for the Bears, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's no doubt about it that he's going to get rich at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's a lot of people now that they're looking at what's going on everywhere. And when I say everywhere, I mean from New York on the left to D.C. on the right and all this other stuff. And they're saying everybody's making some money somehow. So if we can get the stadium built and not have to listen to it anymore, it might be worth it.
Huh. Well, did you see the piece in the Tribune today, which just talked to, it said, do Indiana taxpayers want to pay for a new stadium? And then they talked to some economists, and they said Indiana's going to put up $1 billion to build the stadium that the Bears will lease under very attractive terms. Now, how does Indiana get their $1 billion back? Well, they've got these right. taxing bodies set up. And over a 30-year period, you're going to hope that you get enough money off of these taxes that are going to be set up to offset the costs. And all of the economists that looked at that, not that they are future tellers, they said, no, you do this optimistically. This is not going to throw off enough money. And what if people don't spend as much money in the hotels? You're not going to have the revenue stream, and now the taxpayers have to carry the burden, right?
I think 100%, and I think a lot of the hotels and the hospitality is still going to be in Chicago. And I would say one last thing, and I'm really actually in the middle on this because I do think that the state and the city governments, they want that for civic pride and a whole lot of other things. And I think there can be a co-sharing responsibility. But with the Seattle Seahawks going for $9.6 billion, the Bears are worth probably $11.5, $12, $13 billion. They could sell 10% of that team, and they could pay for that stadium in 30 seconds. And I think the value of these things has gotten so crazy that this isn't 20 years ago. It's a whole new game, and billionaires are owning them. And if the McCaskies can't play with the big boys, then they need to sell.
Right, because their wealth is tied up with the team. It's not like real estate or shipping got them
rich. No, they're cash poor.
So too bad for them. But they're right, sell a portion of the team. And the other thing that the article pointed out, these economists said, is the other thing is if you, Indiana, are going to generate $1 billion for the Bears, just think about that. 16 games, what, nine home games a year, including exhibition, you're going to build you are going to spend $1 billion on that. What's the opportunity cost? What could you have done with $1 billion in Indiana that you won't do because you're going to build a stadium for a billionaire football team? Think about that.
Well, John, that's been the age-old question of, you know, how much money it costs. And I'm not even talking about the current political climate of going to war, but any war and any natural catastrophe that we have that we spend billions on to save it is, where did that money come from, and why weren't we using it to help the greater good beforehand?
Tom Gimbel is the job expert and founder of LaSalle Network, and he joins us Tuesdays about this time. Let's talk again next week, Tom.
Stay cool. I just went outside, John. It's very hot out today.
Hold on. I'll alert the media. That's Tom Gimbel, the job expert. Thank you, Tom. This is the Noon Business Lunch on WGN Radio. John Williams here, along with Harvey Wells, the founder of Lower Tech Bills. LowerTechBills.com is his phone number. You can request a free tech check from him at hmwellsradio@gmail.com. I'll give the phone number too, but maybe easiest right now to just remember lowertechbills.com. Harvey's in our studio again. Hi, Harvey.
Good to see you, John. A pleasure, always.
For some reason, my computer now is not talking to my wireless printer.
You know what? We're going to have to do it old school. Is that a listener
No, this is John Williams telling you that.
Oh,
I actually
John.
Called the local computer repair guy,
and
I said, how about we get a cable and just run it from the computer to the thing, and then it doesn't have to be wireless, and I don't have to worry about Wi-Fi connectivity.
You know, you can do that. I'm not an IT guy, and actually I wish I had somebody that I could partner up with that does IT. But I know with my printer at home, I had the exact same issue about 2 years ago. I stuck an Ethernet cable from the modem into my printer. Boom, it works fine.
Yeah, that's, I think, what I'm going to do, because at my house in the basement, the Internet isn't so strong. I've even got one of those repeaters, you know.
Yeah, extenders, yeah.
In fact, you had, can I just read what you
Absolutely,
said here?
Absolutely, sir.
You wrote, I recently visited a client's home and they had horrible Internet service, even though they were paying for a very high speed. As I've said before, speed does not equate to a home's coverage area. As it happened, this was a two-floor house that also had a finished basement with the modem on the second floor. The coverage to the basement was pretty much non-existent, even though they had an extender plugged into the wall. That could have been me.
Well, and they had it plugged in, and they thought because they plugged it in, it would work. But I tried to explain to them, just because you plug an extender into the wall and it's and it has a green light on, yeah, all that green light means is that you've got it plugged into the wall. Oh. It doesn't mean that you're getting an Internet signal. You then have to pair the extender to your Internet. I just did one in my own house last week just to see how it works, and it took me a while. It took me a good 15 or 20 minutes to figure the darn thing out. Most people just plug the thing in the wall and go, hey, I'm extended. You're not.
I noticed that with my wireless speakers. You know, if I want to say
yeah, you got to pair them.
It's just pairing now.
Yeah.
And
yep,
get that voice.
Yeah, and these poor people then, because they couldn't figure it out, they said they would call a provider to do service to come to
right,
their home.
Right.
And they got on the phone, and I started laughing because I knew where this was going. I said, look, it's much better to just go to the store. If you go to the store, you'll see a human. They'll set up an appointment. Well, this person didn't want to do that. They were on hold for probably 15 minutes. When it finally got to the point where their queue was up, they couldn't understand a word the person was saying. Yeah. Not the person's fault on the other side. English is a second language. That's just the way it was. By the time I left their home, they were a good 20 minutes into it, and they hadn't figured it out yet. The moral of the story is, if your provider has a store, you really should go to that store and talk to a human. And in fact, the folks at Xfinity, I got to give them props. They just opened two new stores, like one's in Cal City, another in Oak Lawn. And the reason they're opening stores is because they want to do that human-to-human touch.
I have the Eero repeaters,
yep.
E-E-R-O. Now, I'm leasing that from my cable provider.
Okay.
I know I could buy them.
You can.
One of them actually broke, though, wasn't working, and they came out, serviced it, replaced it, set it back up for free because I was leasing it. It's their equipment.
Right.
So I felt good about that. I know I'm throwing money away with that, but I also like the fact that it's their problem, not mine.
Well, and that's a good point. And most of the Internet providers, Internet is an interesting thing right now because that's where the action is as far as saving money. There's a lot of money to be saved. The Internet providers, because there's so many of them now with all the T-Mobiles, Verizons, AT&Ts, Xfinity, there's so many out there, Astound, that are hawking Internet, that the prices have actually dropped. It's the only service that I can think of that's actually got some deals out there right now. And the thing is that they're actually offering free modems now. Back in the day, if you went to Xfinity, they would charge you $15 a month for that modem. No longer do they do that because
oh, really?
Of the competition. Yeah.
I wonder if I'm paying $15 for my modem and I called them up, if they would
Absolutely,
wipe that out.
Absolutely, you could. And the thing is, you just said it. It's their problem then if the modem goes bad. Some of my clients have bought their own modems, and I go, well, that's great if it works, but whose problem is it? It's yours if it breaks.
Home Run Derby was on what last night?
Netflix. First time anything in baseball, well, I should say first time in the All-Star festivities have been on a streaming service. And Netflix has now decided that they want to get into a lot more live programming. They're going to have live separate channels. They're going to do more sports. Next week, the Field of Dreams game is going to take place between the Twins and the Phillies. That is only going to be on Netflix. Next year, there's going to be several NFL games only on Netflix.
I knew that, but they're getting into other sports
They're getting
as well.
Into other sports.
But what happens if they get the Masters or, you know, one of these?
And that could happen.
The Super Bowl.
Absolutely could happen. And you've seen it already with some of the sports. Example, F1 moved to Apple TV streaming service this year. They used to be on ESPN.
Oh, I know. I watched them on ESPN.
Yeah. You cannot anymore.
I was wondering why I wasn't catching the races.
The races are now all on Apple. See, this is where the Trojan horse of these streaming services has come out. They have now shown us who they are. They want to grab everything they can as far as live stuff goes. Well, then, and it makes sense. But we're paying.
Well, it does make sense.
Makes sense for them, not for us.
What do you make then of the Paramount Warner Brothers merger?
This is a big issue for those not following the business of TV, and actually movie studios. Paramount Skydance, which is owned by the Ellison family of Oracle fame, has $111 billion deal to acquire Warner Brothers Discovery. That has been going along swimmingly. The FCC and all the people have approved it in the government level. But just the other day, 12 attorneys general have filed a lawsuit to stop this, because this is going to be a huge amount of consolidation in the cable TV, movie studio, and even theme parks are involved. There's so much stuff. There's over 50 cable channels that are going to be under one roof, and it's going to be bad for consumers, including streaming services like HBO and Showtime are now going to be under the same roof.
So the Ellisons would then control CNN, right?
They sure would.
And I wonder what that would do to CNN.
Well, there's been thought that because of, and not to get too deep political here, but there's no secret that the Ellison family and the Trump family are pretty close, so you can maybe connect those dots.
And maybe it was that closeness that was paving the way for this deal, so maybe that would be the payback. All right, we'll give you the deal, but we need a little more favorable coverage on the network.
It was shocking about a month ago when the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, approved it without any kind of any negativity whatsoever. They said, here, it's fine.
But your concern is that if one company owns CNN, TBS, TNT, True TV, I don't have time to go through all of them.
No, you don't. We'd go through the entire half hour.
But I'll just click on some. The Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, Discovery, Nick Jr., TLC, Discovery Channel, The Science Channel, HGTV, The Food Network, Oprah's Network, the Smithsonian Channel, MTV, VH1, the Paramount Network, BET, and all of its sister networks. HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, Paramount, Discovery. One company. I'm just mentioning a few.
And Channel 2 here. And
if one company owns all of them. If somebody came in with a plan like that, you would say we need to break this up. That's too much ownership.
Remember back in the day when Ma Bell owned all these telephone companies?
Sure.
and everybody went, we got to break them up.
Well, and we did.
And it's going to happen again, I think.
But here they're asking to create
right.
a monolith.
And
like
that's
that.
Why the lawsuits have been filed in California court. It's being held by California, but 11 other attorney generals have joined the suit. Interestingly enough, Illinois is not one of them.
The attorneys general would be arguing that this is going to raise prices for consumers.
Yes, and that's...
Do you think it will raise
yes,
prices?
Yes, I do.
Because they would have consolidation.
Right.
They'd have efficiencies, no?
So what happens is if you own that many cable channels, then they can go to the cable providers like Xfinity or YouTube TV or DirecTV and say, hey, if you want to continue to run our channels, you're going to have to pay more for the access to those channels. And then guess who's going to pay? We are. They're going to take that pay and they're just going to pass it right along to us. So, yeah, we're going to end up paying for this. No doubt.
224 says, if you are already a customer, you can switch your account to the spouse's name to get the deal. I'm not sure what deal you were talking about there, 224. But
well, the spouse would have to be, it would depend on the provider, because a lot of times if you're at the same address, they've got that figured out.
Guys, when you rent Xfinity routers, they turn your internet into a mobile hotspot without your permission. It slows down your connection, and they are pirating your electric. You can Google it. That happens. I don't know what to do with that.
I have not heard that whatsoever. I will check into that, though, to see if that is indeed the case.
Our number is 312-981-7200. Do you have a specific question about your internet? Have you bumped into somebody who's got two Netflix accounts and didn't realize it?
Just yesterday.
Really?
Yep. A client of mine had was double paying. And the only way they find this out is when they contact me. What I do is a free tech check. And what happens is when a client contacts me, we do two free phone calls. No obligation whatsoever. I send them my client assessment questionnaire, which does everything from your cell phone to your TV to your internet. And when we go over all the streaming services, I tell them, look, check. There's four different ways you can get charged for this stuff. You can get from your bank. You can get it from a credit card.
Right.
You can get it by directly subscribing. You can even get it through Amazon Prime. So sure enough, they checked, and they had two different Netflix accounts coming from two different credit cards. And they love that. Why would? I mean, they didn't. Netflix loved it.
Netflix loves it. Yeah, I wonder how many. I wonder what percentage of their accounts are double accounts.
It happens accounts. Pretty often, yeah. Actually, more than you think.
5%, 6%, yeah. Who knows? It's 1246, 312-981-7200. Here's your chance to ask Harvey Wells a question. He's the guy at lowertechbills.com. Harvey Wells is in our studio. His business is lowertechbills.com. He helps you lower your tech bills. 319 says, Harvey, why am I blocked out of six teams in Iowa, but only two teams in Illinois on MLB TV?
Yeah, it's very arcane rules of the way the MLB does their home coverage areas. And if you live in certain parts, especially of Iowa, or where you can claim a team, there are some areas that gets as many as six different teams, like the Twins and the Cardinals, Cubs, Sox. Others just get one or two. It's very hit and miss, depending upon where you live, how MLB decides what you watch.
So if you're in Iowa,
you're blacked out, in other words, in certain areas.
They say that the Cardinals are a local team for you.
Yeah, and if they are, they'll black you out. Because what they'll say is, well, you should be able to get it a different way.
How about this question? How legal is this Superbox?
It depends on how you use it. A lot of people, there's one called VC, another called Superbox. These are legal Android TV boxes, not to get too technical. As long as you're using it as a box and not spending extra money to get it with things that you should be paying for. There are, hey, buddy, this just fell off a truck. I can get you HBO for free. And a lot of these boxes are fed with these things, and you can get them for free, but they're really illegal.
Wait a minute. So the attraction to a super box.
It's a simple box like an Apple TV box or an Amazon Fire Stick.
Ostensibly, it does what?
It helps you stream things like Netflix
but
and
they
HBO Max. Yes, they can be preloaded by less than stellar individuals that will give you MLB that your guy just mentioned and HBO and Netflix. All these things are preloaded for free, but you're going to pay for it somewhere down the line by somebody having your banking information. It's very dangerous.
We were talking about routers. Is there a router, this listener wants to know, that you recommend?
I recommend taking the router that comes from your provider. They're all giving them for free now. There's no reason for you to have your own. Now, you're talking about a modem or a router. Those are two different things. A router could be an extender, and in that case, I do like the Eros is a good one. But if you're just talking about the plain old modem, take the one that comes from your provider.
How do you spell Eros?
E-E-R-O-S,
okay, that's the
one you have.
Eros.
Yeah.
Two
yeah.
E's, E-E-R-O.
Yeah.
What about these VC boxes?
Same thing. Exact same thing as Superbox. These are boxes that are legal, but depending upon what you put on them or what is preloaded on them.
Okay, but let me finish this question. What about these VC boxes, which are $300 on Amazon? You buy once and you bypass the cable company and you still get all the channels.
It's not legal. Technically, what you're doing is pirating signals from a provider. Is the FBI going to come to your door? I think Cash Patel has better things to do.
Not sure he does.
Well, okay. I walked right into that one. But the fact is, it is not legal to be pirating signals. That doesn't mean you will get caught or not, but it is technically not legal. The box is legal. But
the use of it is largely not.
With these premium services, that's correct.
I'm out of time, Harvey.
Oh, my goodness. We're just getting started here. Great to see you again, sir.
If people go to
lowertechbills.com, hmwellsradio@gmail.com, or you can text me at 312-307-1700.
You can text him to 312-307-1700, and he literally will come to your house.
And it's free, two calls for free.